We have to test it again.
You were telling us about friendship school.
As a public school, I considered it, I guess, quite adequate. With a good faculty. I also felt that the teachers at Shelley High School, which I attended, were quite competent. I had a reasonably good scholastic record, at least to the extent that I was considered sort of a valedictorian. And had a choice of delivering a commencement speech at Sailors and Soldiers Memorial Hall.
That's after graduating from Shenley.
After graduating from Shenley. A choice between that or playing piano solos. And I chose to write a speech, a little speech, and I delivered it. And even though I knew very little about what I was talking about, I recall that the subject was the state and the school. That was in 1920.
You must have had a good time in high school.
Yes, I was not an athlete. I had good teachers. I remember their names. I also studied harmony, which was an elective subject, and had two very fine harmony teachers, Mr. Bellingham and Mr. Qualwasser.
A good memory.
I remember the names of my faculty for the most part at Shenley, yes. Good teachers.
Would you want to, or do you mind telling us a little about your courtship with your wife? You said you were married in 56.
Well, I was married for the first time in 1930. And was divorced about 5 years later. And married my present wife in 1951. And she was a divorced from an American soldier. She was born in Paris, was French. Came to this country, married to her first husband. I met her in Pittsburgh and married her in 1951. I had two children by her. She has one who, by her first marriage.
I see. Yeah, her child lives in Pittsburgh or not?
Her son, he lives in Orlando, Florida.
I mean, speaking of sons and so forth, I just got the Shetty Side Academy directory,
yes.
And I noticed in there are, I think, five
yes.
half names.
Well, I can tell you who they are.
Here it is.
They,
if you wouldn't mind.
The Charles Half is the son of my first cousin, Irving Half. Frederick Half is also the son of my cousin, Irving Half. Howard Half is a first cousin of mine. The son of Morris Aff, my father's brother. Irving Aff is also a first cousin, brother of Howard Aff. Robert Aff, who lives in Israel. Tel Aviv, Israel, is my brother's son, comma, my nephew.
Do you keep contact with?
Occasionally I hear from him. We're in contact. We have some business interests in common. He owns part of the building I have in Greentree.
I see.
We're joint owners. His father owned half of it and bequeathed his share to his son who lives in Israel. And to that extent, we have a business relationship. But we have very little occasion to be in communication other than possibly that one business relationship. We're friendly enough, but have very little in common.
Sure, quite a distance away.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I noticed you had a fascinating collection of miniatures.
Yes, I guess
different
they
materials.
Are. Yes, my wife has picked them up from time to time at auction sales. She used to attend auction sales. I haven't really looked at them lately, but I guess they are quite interesting.
Oh, yes, and they're different materials. Some are porcelain, some seem to be ivory, some glass.
Yes.
Very fascinating.
Yes, they're all right.
But that's her hobby.
Well, not at the moment. She must have gotten these things quite a number of years ago. Mm-hmm. She still has them.
Ivan, were you active in any of the Jewish communal things? I know you did a great job with the Multiple Sclerosis Society. I wondered if any of the Jewish
The Jewish organizations, I can't say I've been very helpful. I make a token to contributions to Jewish causes.
Oh, sure.
But I can't say that. My brother, on the other hand, was a very ardent solicitor of funds for Israel.
That's right.
I might say this, not for the purpose of paying himself any compliment, but many years ago, Ben Gurion made a trip to Pittsburgh, delivered a speech at the Concordia Club. And was so ardent in his presentation of the Israeli cause that I succumbed to his solicitation, had no money at the time, very little, and went to the Union National Bank, borrowed $10,000, gave it to the Israeli cause.
That's a fascinating story.
Well, if you consider it that, but that's something. since you reminded me of any interest in Jewish causes, it just happened to occur to me that to that extent I made a little contribution.
Do you recall the Prohibition years? Did they change
Prohibition
anything
years?
In your family's life or your life?
No, the only recollection, incident to the days when Prohibition went into effect, it was the year 1920, when I was a freshman at Brown University, and had a drink of whiskey in Shedley's restaurant, which was legally sold to me in 1920, and I say legally because the state of Rhode Island was the last state in the Union to repeal, well, to enter into Prohibition laws.
Fascinating, I didn't know
that. I recall that in 1920, yes. I attended my 65th reunion a year ago, June a year ago, and found it very interesting. There were about 14 of us there at the time. Most of the graduates of that class passed on. I'm 86 now, and I was 85 then.
You're a young-looking 86,
well,
sir.
Thank you. That's what I am.
You don't look it.
87 in December.
Jean, do you have any questions?
Now that we're jogging your memory, do you have anything that you're thinking of that you would like to tell us, some anecdotal story that happened or something that was unusual or different or you'd like to have down on tape?
Like that young man that when you moved into your neighborhood that said, you
know, no Jew?
Jacob, yeah. No Jew, that yeah. Kind of thing.
Yeah, well,
or in business, whatever.
I'm trying to think of...
When did you begin to play bridge? When did you start becoming interested in the game of bridge? I know you're Pittsburgh's first life master, and you told us a very interesting story about how the master points began, the 10 cents
of
points.
Oh, yes, yes,
that was,
yes.
That was interesting. But when did your interest begin?
I would say a few years after I graduated from college, the game of bridge is a fascinating pastime, which in some ways has developed into a phenomenon. Bridge, unlike other card games, is a unique form of pastime which is developed internationally and has created thousands of jobs for people who directly or indirectly are involved in the game of bridge. Another peculiar attribute of the game is its development into a pastime, which in many ways transcends the attributes of most card games, which are played to a great extent for gambling purposes.
What started, piqued your interest in it? Did you take lessons at first, or just get involved in it?
My interest in bridge had a very evolutionary trend for the reason that in my very younger days, my parents and even my grandmother played the game of bridge before contract bridge became such an important international game. So that the game, the present game of contract bridge, is the outgrowth of two predecessor games, one known as auction bridge and the other known as bridge whist. Period. As I said before, I watched my parents and grandmother play bridge when I was a very young boy living on Evelyn Street. And my development of the interest in bridge had a rather evolutionary trend, to the point that the interest became quite substantial, and at one time I was one of the vice presidents of the American Contract Bridge League.
Did you play with any of the, with Jacoby or any of the other writers of bridge?
Well, that's a rather interesting point. In the 1940s, bridge players throughout the United States, especially those who were preeminent, and at the time I was not a preeminent bridge player, nor am I today, but a group of bridge players chartered a plane, an airplane, which originated in New York, where it boarded some of the bridge playing passengers, proceeded to Philadelphia, then to Pittsburgh, then to Cleveland, and then to California, where the bridge playing passengers all participated in the California tournaments at the time, and found the trip very interesting. Especially, as I recall, we stopped in Las Vegas on the way to California and visited Las Vegas for the first time then. But on the trip, oh, by the way, yes, among the passengers on the trip was Gorham. And uh, Jacoby. I think Jacoby was, he was on the trip. And Solomon, the Philadelphia bridge expert. They were mostly semi-professional or professional bridge players. I wasn't one of them. I went along more or less for the ride, enjoyed myself.
Mm-hmm. Did you tell us a little bit about Ernest? That's your brother, right?
Ernest, yes. Ernest succeeded his father and became a furniture factory representative, and also an inactive participant in the wholesale floor covering business, which I headed and engaged in. But he died in 79. He would be 83, died 4 years ago, became quite sick, and but prior to his death he moved to Israel to join his son who lives there now, and he died in Israel and was buried in Israel.
Was this always a dream of his to go to Israel, or his son spurred
him on? No, I wouldn't say that. Desire developed because his son, having moved to Israel, where his son raised a family and mm-hmm. lives there now, has two children, live in Israel. And he moved to Israel because his wife was, who lived in New York, was dedicated to the Jewish cause, and influenced him to move to Israel. That was about it.
Is he ever learned a language too?
He is, I saw him, he was in this country a few years ago. Yes, he learned Hebrew, and he learned to speak Hebrew. Yes, he did.
I really enjoy talking with you.
Well, fascinating.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you.
I've learned a lot, and it's been interesting.
For what?
You have a lot to contribute to this oral history.
The early, I guess in one respect because of my age and my family connections, is one of the few people who remembers the Jewish community on the north side, at least from stories that were told by my grandmother and my parents. The early Jewish settlers in Pittsburgh lived largely on the north side of Pittsburgh, as you probably know. And most of them were immigrants from Germany. Virtually no Eastern European Jews in Pittsburgh at the time. And toward the turn of the century, the Eastern Jews came to Pittsburgh as they went to other parts of the country. But Pittsburgh in that respect was not unique. Because most of the Jewish settlers came from Germany at that time.
Mm-hmm. And how did the two groups get along? Did they help one another? Did the Germans help the Eastern Jews?
It is a strange attribute of the human being that in many areas one group snubs the other. considering himself superior, justifiably or not. And at that time, there was a clannishness among the German Jews, and we looked down a little bit at the others who were immigrants. And I recall the feeling that existed in our family, except the feeling of my Uncle Paul. And when he heard the newcomers castigated, I recall his having said to me, "The Jews from Eastern Europe are the coming people."
Oh, really?
And he insisted in that belief. And as you well know, his prediction materialized. And that was what I heard when I was a youngster. My grandfather, who was a member of the Reformed Jewish congregation in the North Side, resigned from the Jewish temple there because he had an argument with a rabbi, Dr. Wise. His name was Wise. Dr. Meyer, I'm sorry, whose son became an eminent professor at Pitt, Dr. Mayer, they called him. He was known as Dr. Mayer then. But he was a member of the temple. And
what synagogue was that called?
It was
Road of Sholem?
Yes, I think it was Road of Sholem. And my great uncle, I have pictures of my great grandparents, was Dr. Einhorn, who wrote the prayer book.
Yes, he told us that.
I told you that. And he, I told you he was the rabbi in Baltimore. And was asked to leave the pulpit because of his northern leanings before the Civil War, and became the rabbi in Philadelphia and then later in Brooklyn. They used his prayer book up to a number of years ago. Now they don't use his prayer book anymore. It's known as the Einhorn Prayer Book.
Is the tape out? Are we out of tape?
Just about out of tape.
Any last words, Ivan? We're almost out of tape.
I'm very pleased that you came, and very pleased to be able to talk to you for what it's worth. I have nothing but largely leisure on my hands. I do play some bridge. I continue to play bridge, which, as I said, is something apart from being a card game. It's something of a phenomenon among thousands of people throughout the world.
You mean you don't help your wife with the housework?
Well, there's very little to do here because nobody comes here to visit us. There's a little joke. I don't tell jokes as a rule, but it's sort of applies to what you're saying. There was a man who was in a mental institution, and a social worker proceeded along the aisle to interview him. And she said to him, Why is it that you're wearing no clothes? And he said, nobody ever comes to see me. But she said, why are you wearing a high silk hat? He said, well, somebody may come.
That's cute.
So that has to do with, yeah. So somebody may come here, which you did.
Are you more active socially in Florida, or do you just lead a leisurely life there?
Well, I play bridge down there. I have a home, an apartment. I've had one there in Hallandale, Florida, for a number of years. And in a few months, we'll be going down there. This is largely a place to hang our hat. We really don't need it. We could live down in Florida just comfortably. But this is, as I say, a place